This podcast is presented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Division of Diabetes Translation. Presenters will share innovative strategies studied as part of the InGear network of projects to assist National Diabetes Prevention Program Lifestyle Change Programs, or Diabetes Self-Management Education and Support Services, grow program enrollment, retention, and behavior change using technology. The goal of the InGear network is to foster innovative approaches to increase enrollment and retention in the National DPP Lifestyle Change Program and Diabetes Self-Management Education and Support Services. Take it away, Alexis.
Welcome to today's InGear podcast. I'm Alexis Williams with the CDC. And for the next 45 minutes or so, we'll be hearing from several InGear projects about the topic of growing enrollment, retention, and behavior change using technology. In case you want to take notes, we've provided you with a visual placemat to help you. This can be used for the upcoming meeting sessions where we'll talk more about what you hear today on our podcast. So let's dive right into the discussions. During our first interview, Caroline will be speaking to Kyra.
Thank you, Alexis. Today, I'm excited to be speaking with Kyra from Fresh Try. Her project is called Fresh Try Lifestyle Change Program Digital App. This project is just wrapping up, finishing final reports. But Kyra, can you go back and actually start with telling us why you chose this project and what problem you were trying to solve along the way?
Thank you, Caroline. Our project is really focused on how do you change behavior and help people with the diabetes prevention program who are vulnerable populations and get results that are more retentive and more engaging, as well as drive the outcomes.
Wonderful. And can you speak a little bit more to how your project is utilizing technology to achieve those goals?
Absolutely. So our technology is basically a habit formation software, and it is designed using behavioral neuroscience. And so we really target the brain and how the brain works. And it turns out that there's an area of the brain called the habenula, which is a failure trigger. And it basically, if you think you failed at something, then it basically kills your motivation to keep going. Myself, I come from a Native American background, Leech Lake tribe, Ojibwe tribe. And in our experience, ancestral trauma, oppression, racism, those kinds of things really take a big role in whether you can change your health and whether your brain is functioning in a way that allows you to be empowered. Our software is to dismantle that disempowerment and to scoot around that part of the brain so that vulnerable populations who have a harder life and who have these forces, these SDOH forces and health inequity forces, are able to still do whatever they dream of for themselves, for their health, for their pre-diabetes situation.
Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I appreciate that explanation. I'm curious, of course, when projects like this are put into place, we often encounter some challenges. Are there any that you experienced during the course of your project that you think were particularly notable?
Yeah, there's many. So for the sake of the audience, we started our program. It was a RCT that we were testing our software, and then COVID hit right afterwards. And so it's something where we were launching an RCT for the first time as a startup organization, as a startup team in the middle of a pandemic. And so all kinds of things ensued, whether it be enrollment of the actual sites, whether the sites who were changing from in-person to Zoom could even have the capacity to add an additional software. So there was a lot of change management that we learned during the course of the 2 years of the study that the study ran. And then also enrolling vulnerable populations who were least likely to continue with something like DPP. You know, on a good day in non-pandemic times, those populations are hard to reach and enroll. And so keeping them enrolled, engaged, and retained was certainly the biggest challenge of the day.
Definitely. If it was possible to go back to the start, is there anything that you would have done differently, knowing what you know now at the end?
No, our team did amazingly. We weathered every storm, and the team was very creative and very iterative. part of our solution is to teach people to iterate instead of set goals and targets and then track against those targets. So we use something called the iterative mindset, which is kind of the active ingredient, if you will, in our approach. And that allowed us to apply that to ourselves and to iterate on the study as it was happening, kind of an emergent design. And I feel like everything we could have done, we did do.
That's wonderful. And it's a very impressive example, I think, of being able to pivot to keep your project on track. Of course, the flip side of that coin, we have our challenges, but we also have our high points in any project. Can you share a little bit about what was most surprising or even inspiring about your work on this project the past few years?
Yeah, I think that the sites, the health coaches, working with the health coaches on this project, in this RCT, we did not pay participants to give us any data. We just relied on the relationships with the sites so that we wouldn't have any bias in selection bias of the participants. And the inspiring thing was that we came out with really strong data. We have statistical significance on retention, engagement, and we're verging on that with the outcomes in terms of we're doing a sub-analysis on vulnerable populations and benchmarking against that versus the national averages. So we think we're going to come out ahead on weight loss outcomes as well.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. And you've shared a lot already, and I really appreciate everything that you've mentioned. But just in the interest of our other InGear partners, thinking about your project, what is one thing that you want the other InGear partners to know about your work?
It's really important to include vulnerable populations of all kinds and to develop solutions for them that are different, that really deviate from the norm and iterate on the base model, if you will, of the national DPP or other projects that people might be working on, and really just collaborate, talk to other people, get outside the box and challenge yourself to continue to innovate. And that's what this funding is for. And that's what this really inspiring group is about.
Thank you again for everything you've shared. I think it's very helpful for others to hear about the work that you've done. Thanks again for your time, Kyra, and for the information that you shared about the Fresh Try project. Next, Alexis will be conducting an interview with Morgan and Kevin from BioCentric.
Thanks, Caroline. Next up, we're going to learn more about the Serious Health Gain to Support Lifestyle Change programs for diabetes. This project is being led by Morgan and Kevin from BioCentric. First thing I'd like to know is what made you choose this project?
Yeah, so thanks, Alexis. So our intervention, which is called WellQuest, was really designed and developed as a tool to aid in retention. So as you mentioned in the introduction, WellQuest is a serious health game, and it was designed for play on mobile devices. And it was intended to be a complement to the national DPP. So another tool for lifestyle coaches to engage with their participants in between the coach-led sessions. So it's just one more tool in the toolbox for lifestyle coaches to really help engage with participants. But at the same time, as we were going through the process of designing and developing the game, we also saw opportunities to expand beyond that a bit. So there's some features of the game and some functionality that's built in to really help with the adoption and maintenance of healthy lifestyle habits, and also to reinforce knowledge elements of a curriculum.
Can you talk a little bit about how technology helped you to solve this problem? Like, what was the role that technology played in this approach to engaging people in the national DPP?
Yeah, I think Kevin hit on it pretty well with technology was really at the core of this project. We did want to develop WellQuest, which is available on mobile devices, because we did feel that that was something readily accessible to most people within the population. We did many different surveys and things that kind of solidified these results as well versus tablets or versus PCs and things like that.
Yeah, and it just seems like we're trying to get people to keep up their lifestyle change habits. And so to be able to access support, behavior change support tools on your mobile device just seems like a really interesting and innovative way to support people as they move through their days.
Extending beyond that, within the game, there is some integration with other devices. So participants who are playing the game, they can integrate fitness trackers. So that's just a great way to track the progress of participants toward their overall health goals. We've set up the game with some challenges and some unique features to really encourage that behavior change.
That sounds great and fun. So what are some things that you learned in the process of conducting this research?
So we applied a user-centered approach to the design and development of the WellQuest game. We included a lot of surveys at the beginning. So just for context, we were in the group of the first awardees, BAA awardees, as part of this in-gear research network. So we've been at this for a while, but we did a lot of work in the planning stages to do surveys of participants, of lifestyle coaches, of program coordinators, administrators, a lot of different stakeholder audiences to help inform what kind of game we would like to integrate into, or what kind of gameplay we would like to integrate into this app. We also did focus groups of small group focus groups, participants and lifestyle coaches once we had playable versions to get a little bit of feedback on that as well. So a lot was learned about what the preferences are for this population, what the participants would like to see as part of a game, as well as what the lifestyle coaches would like to see as part of the game as well. It was certainly a learning process for us because we are doing this as a randomized controlled trial to test the impact of our intervention. And that part of it has really been both challenging and very informative as well, because we are not an academic center ourselves. We're not a recognized DPP provider. So we had to go through some steps to work with an independent IRB. We had to go through many steps to partner with organizations that are recognized providers of the national DPP in order to get access to participants, to randomize them to the game playing arm or control arm. So a lot has been learned along the way.
It sounds like you did learn a lot. Do you have any thoughts about any areas you want to dig in deeper with this research?
Yeah, so as with many apps and many technologies like this, we understand that the process is iterative. So this is our first step, is to get a playable version into the hands of participants and then collect the data along the way. So as I mentioned, we do see WellQuest as being primarily a retention tool. So the study that we've designed has a primary endpoint of session attendance and what kind of impact we're having on that relative to the control group. But beyond that, you know, we are looking at some other endpoints along the way to see. So we're curious to see what the data will show. The study is ongoing right now. We're hoping to wrap up our data collection process toward the end of the summer, early fall, and work on wrapping up the project. At the same time, we're also doing some surveys of the lifestyle coaches that have engaged with the game for their participants, as well as surveys of actual participants that have played the game, just to see what the roadmap looks like for our next steps in that iterative process. Where are we going to go from here? What needs to be changed? What worked well? What didn't work well? So it's very much a learning process for us.
Yeah. So was there anything surprising or inspiring that you've learned so far?
I would say the most inspiring portion throughout this whole experience really was the community of the National DPP. As Kevin mentioned, we had from the start a lot of surveys and focus groups and things where we were able to really get to know coaches and coordinators, administrators, and different aspects of the DPP, as well as some participants who had been through it as well, and just to go through what things would be beneficial to them in the app. And we really wanted to pull that sense of community into the app. So it's really more of an extension of the DPP and the curriculum more than anything. And I think we came to a really good conclusion with that, with some of the features. They're able to speak with their coaches through the game. They're able to compete with some of their other participants. But it really translated very well into the study that we had as well. We have officially enrolled 59 different organizations, which led to all of the participants that we've brought in. But we've talked to so many other organizations who maybe didn't have a cohort during the time or things like that. And they were still willing to help and very excited about this endeavor. And honestly, I mean, there was nothing better than when we got to onboard a game playing organization and see the coaches' reaction to the game and how excited they were to bring that to their class. So it's been really special to be just like a small part of that community and hope that this game, the results will show the benefit that it had.
What is one thing that you think the other InGear projects should know about your work?
I think it's a good question. And I think the one thing that we would like the other groups to know is, at least from our perspective, is just how robust the research effort has been and how helpful the organizations have been. We have a study sample size of about 550 participants. So these are all enrolled participants in the National DPP. It's across both study arms. So it's people in the control arm as well as the game playing arm. But just to see that kind of response from organizations to help us get access to those participants. And there's been some work and effort on the organization's part as well to really help with the informed consent process and data collection process and things like that. So it's been a tremendous pleasure to be able to work with those organizations, the coordinators, the coaches, and everyone else involved.
You know, it's a really interesting project in terms of not only the use of technology, but this idea that the programs can partner with you almost in terms of creation and what does that space look like and what's the best way to use it in the field. I think it's a really great example of user-centered design.
Agreed. And I think one thing that has struck me, at least, is just the heterogeneity across the program. There's a lot of different organizations that deliver the National DPP. As Morgan said, they're all very passionate about helping people, but we're trying to deliver this tool to be an effective instrument to help people engage with their participants over time. And how to do that the best way is, we're getting there. We're going to need to make some iterations to it, but we're very excited and interested to see what the data will show.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the results.
Thanks, Morgan and Kevin. I really enjoyed learning more about your project, and I was really impressed by how many organizations that you've been able to partner with. I think the total I heard was 59 different organizations who are deploying the diabetes prevention program, which is just wonderful. Next up, I have Allie from the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors. Their project was testing the effectiveness of a text-based strategy, Text Health, to streamline enrollment into the National Diabetes Prevention Program. Hi, Allie. Can you give us a brief overview of your program?
Sure. Thanks, everybody. We are testing an intervention that couples a media marketing campaign that's public-facing with a call to action to engage an individual to learn more about their risk for prediabetes by texting a keyword to a short code and then engaging using their mobile device with taking the risk test. And then the next step is if they do test high for being at risk for prediabetes, we get them referred into a diabetes prevention program in their community. And we're testing this project in 3 media markets in Pennsylvania. So we'll be doing this in Pittsburgh, Harrisburg, and Philadelphia over the next 6 months.
Wow, that's great. And I can clearly see the role, obviously, of technology in this project using the text and also the mobile device follow-up. I know you all are getting started with this, but tell me, so far, have you faced any particular challenges, anything that has been an obstacle for you?
Well, I would say that even though we are just getting started, we're already prepared for one of the biggest challenges that we've just observed over the number of years we've been working in the prediabetes space, which is enrollment, really reaching people in the right moment at the right time with the right message so that they feel ready to take the next step. So I think we are prepared that recruitment and enrollment, and we've built that into our study design. We've built that into the work that we're doing with our partners. We're really focused right now on making sure that the marketing campaign, which is public facing, and we're using traditional media, so things like radio ads, flyers, also digital. So we're doing things on websites and in other mobile apps, and then using social media and also a mailer campaign. So we're really trying to reach people in whatever way we can with a message that we hope will be encouraging for them. And this campaign is also tailored for Black African American and Hispanic Latino Pennsylvanians. So we've spent a lot of time really making sure that our materials, the faces, the voices, the likeness, the imagery, we hope will speak to the audience. And we're offering this both in English and Spanish. So I should say the challenge that we think we're going to face is just getting people's attention and getting them enrolled. And so we're proactively really trying to address that challenge before we even get to it.
So it sounds like you do have a very good plan about how to access those specific populations and being really representative in your communications. So hopefully that will be a big help in preventing that classic obstacle of enrollment. So thinking about how things have been going, but also looking to the future, what has been surprising or inspiring? What are you most excited about with this project?
Sure. I think I've been most inspired by and impressed with the passion of our partners that we're working with. We've assembled a really great team on the ground in Pennsylvania. We're working with the Health Promotion Council. We're working with Public Health Management Corporation to do the research. We're working with WellTalk to do the technology piece. We're working with Perry Media Group to do the media outreach. And so we've woven together these partners, and I've just been so impressed with the heart and soul and passion that they bring to their work every day. I think when you get to work supporting a project like this that has the potential to change people's lives for the better and really give them hope for a healthier future, it's hard not to be inspired. And then that has really also, I've seen that and experienced it from our community partners. So we're also working with a number of different community partners to help us get the word out about this campaign, as well as diabetes prevention program organizations directly. And everyone has just really come forward and is excited about this project. They think it's needed. They want to see it be successful. And so it's been very heartwarming to just see the level of passion and dedication that all of our work partners, as well as our community partners, have brought forth. And we've asked a lot of everybody. We're trying to get this campaign out the door at a large scale pretty quickly, and we've had to pivot and make changes, and everyone has just been so accommodating every time we've said, we focus tested this and we think it needs to be that, and everyone has said, okay, well, let's change everything then. So I think that's what I've been most inspired by and excited by, just the partners that we've assembled and the level of passion that they bring to this work.
Yeah, that's great. And I think you've clearly highlighted the existing opportunities for collaboration that you're already sort of harnessing. I think for the audience and those that are listening to this podcast, we are trying to figure out how best to sort of set the stage for our virtual meeting June 16th. So thinking about these other in-gear partners who are going to be listening to this episode, what is one thing or the most important thing that you want all these partners to hear about your work?
Yeah, I think the biggest opportunity and the potential from this work is really learning about how we use a mobile device to be successful in reaching vulnerable populations, priority populations, people that we're trying to reach with health change messaging and behavior change messaging. We've seen the use of telehealth and mobile health strategies have really increased since the public health emergency, with so many people being at home. And when we started this project, we looked at a few data sources, and the Pew Research Center at that time said 97% of Americans own a cell phone and 85% of them have a smartphone. And so when you think about the potential to reach somebody in the convenience of their own home, they're where they are at work or wherever they are with a message about how to be healthier or access to a life-saving intervention using the mobile device and using cellular technology, I just think is so exciting and something that as we look to the future of interventions, I think the more the body of research and the literature expands in this space, particularly as it relates to behavior change, I think there's just going to be so many more innovations that we see, like some of the things that we're already learning from our partners in this in-gear space. And I hope that continues. I hope we get to see more of this work grow and the literature grow and that we get to learn from it and really help reach people with the messages that they need to mitigate some risk factors like unhealthy eating and physical inactivity and help them get closer to living their best life and living a healthy life.
Yeah, definitely. And as you mentioned, I think this is a really exciting time because we kind of have all hands on deck, so to speak. There's so many different folks in this space who are working on these types of innovations and the ways to incorporate technology for behavior change in diabetes prevention and diabetes management. Thinking about everything we've covered, is there anything that we've missed? Anything you want to add to your story about this project?
I think the only thing that I would say is that we got the idea for this project from a small pilot that we ran in Alaska during the pandemic. And we saw some really great early evidence that something like this could be successful. And so it was from that small pilot where we were able to engage individuals using their mobile device, using social media to reach them. And we actually reached 100 individuals. We got 70 of them to take the risk test. And out of that 70, we actually got 30 to enroll in the program and go the whole year in the program. And out of that, we've seen a number of individuals who lost weight and who were successful and who changed their life. And so I think we were just so inspired by that small pilot in Alaska that was successful during the public health emergency of all things. And so we're really excited about where this project might go and what we might learn from it.
All right. Well, thanks for your time, Allie. It was great to hear about your project and good luck as you keep working on this important intervention. Alexis, I'm going to turn it over to you for our next interview.
Thanks, Caroline. So far, we've heard from Fresh Try, BioCentric, and NACDD. And I'm really impressed with the work that's being done around leveraging technology to support enrollment and behavior change. I think there's some really innovative and interesting approaches that is going on right now. So we are going to wrap up this podcast talking with Brian and Sarah from the University of Utah. Their project is the effect of mobile immersive video and motivation on problem solving. So, Brian and Sarah, tell us a bit about your project and the purpose of your work.
Sure. So, the goal of the project is to increase enrollment and engagement in the DPP. There are a number of reasons why people don't enroll in the DPP. The first and simplest is that they're simply unaware that they have prediabetes. And then the second is they may not be motivated for a variety of reasons. And then another common barrier is they may not really have thought about all the practical barriers, practical issues associated with enrolling, how it fits into their lives, all of that sort of thing. So we have three components to our intervention. One of them is a educational website that explains what is prediabetes, what is type 2 diabetes, what is the diabetes prevention program. This was developed by the Ad Council and the ADA. So this is something we're just reusing. And the second component is the mobile 360 videos, which are videos that are played on your phone. And if you move your phone around, you can look around the world at the video. And we have two of these. The first one allows you to experience what's it like to go blind from having diabetes. So this is intended to be, frankly, a little bit scary, but a motivational experience of, oh, this is what happens with this disease, and or could happen with this disease, I should say. And then the second one is a little bit more of the social impacts of the disease. This is a person telling the story of losing some of their energy, losing some of their function, and then finally they have a heart attack in the hospital. And so it's kind of the effects of the disease on their family. And then finally, we have phone coaching, which is based on motivation and problem solving. This is an approach similar to motivational interviewing that people might be more familiar with. And that is intended to help people think through, is the DPP right for me? Should I do an online versus an in-person? What's the timing look like? What are other options in terms of lifestyle change? We train phone coaches to deliver that over a period of time and talk to folks on the phone.
There are a number of factors that affect engagement, particularly in that first month of the National DPP program. You picked three really interesting ones. And what made you think that technology in particular would be a useful solution for addressing these particular engagement challenges?
We've done some pilot work. Both Dr. Simonson and I have done pilot work in the DPP and in the lifestyle change in general. And we've found that this MAPS approach, this motivation and problem solving approach, not just us, but other folks have found that this is a highly effective approach for helping people work through their issues. They're kind of on the fence about whether this is right for them or not, and make up their minds. Again, it's entirely person-centered. So it's not us trying to push them to, you know, join the DPP, it's them deciding whether it's right for them. And then the idea there is that, well, first off, it's more ethical. And second off, if people really decide that it's right for them, then they're more likely to stay engaged over time because they're doing something that they're self-motivated to do. With the videos, we've done some pilot work to show that these are motivational and that they do lead to some increase in enrollment, but that was a pretty small pilot study. We had similar pilot studies with the MAPS. And then the reason that we're really focused on technology for all of this is because I think, as some other InGear folks have mentioned, ownership of cell phones is almost ubiquitous across the entire United States and across all socioeconomic groups. So we can reach all sorts of folks who are at risk, regardless of their socioeconomic status or their rurality or anything like that. Second off, we can bypass, both Dr. Simonson and I do a fair amount of work in clinical spaces as well. And one of the problems that I see is that there are a lot of folks trying to get clinicians to do more and more and more. And getting them to refer folks to the DPP is just one more thing added to their plate that we can bypass all of that. We can pull records from the electronic data health record, the data repository, and say, these are folks who are with prediabetes. They might be appropriate for the DPP. Contact them using their cell phone and enroll them without having to engage the providers at all, so that providers can focus on delivering healthcare and less on promoting preventative care.
Yeah. We've been doing some interviews with people that have finished the study, and we've asked them how they felt about texting, because most of the components of the study came through texting. And they've been very overwhelmingly positive about texting and liking that modality.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you've really looked at the use of technology to, one, help people get the kind of information they want when they want it, at the time they need it. And two, the use of technology to kind of automate some things and eliminate some of the extra steps that providers or coaches or participants might have to take to really engage in this program.
That's exactly right. And I'll mention one other point related to that. The way we've set up the study, we're using a commercial survey software. And the way we've set up the study is that you set up a cohort of individuals that you want to invite to the study. You put them into this workflow and everything is automated after that. There's no need for a human to do anything to send out the first text, the second text, the third text, the fourth text, and each of the content within each of those texts, the website, the videos, et cetera. So the idea being that if DPP providers around the nation want to do something similar, they could use a similar approach. And we realize that they don't have a lot of time and money. So this is a way for them to create an intervention that is more or less plug and play and doesn't require time from a staff member.
And that sounds really useful. So what were some of the challenges you encountered in this project?
Yeah, we've had our share of challenges. I think one of the challenges that stands out to me is that we are having people that are very interested in being referred to the diabetes prevention program, but it is not free. And so they're having to navigate insurance coverage or decide whether they can afford to pay out of pocket for the program. And so we can get them all the way to that point, but then there's some financial barriers that are popping up that are really standing in the way of them actually participating in the program. And our intervention isn't designed to address those financial barriers. So that's been a challenge.
Yeah, it sounds like there's only so much you can do. There are other issues within the system probably. Were there any kind of strategies in particular you tried to use to overcome some of those challenges?
We worked to change the language that we were using to communicate with folks a little bit so that they knew early on that there was a cost associated with this program
initially the messages were about you want a referral, and then when they found out there was a cost, they were surprised and felt they had been somewhat tricked into hearing about a program that there was a cost and that they maybe couldn't afford. So our language has had to shift to say there are costs associated, insurance may cover it, but it may not, so that they know that going in earlier on.
Was there anything surprising that you learned in the course of this project?
I think one thing that's been surprising to me, so MAPS, the motivation and problem solving component of the study, is the only thing that requires one-on-one conversation with the participant. And I would say about half of the people that are randomized to that, we're never able to talk to them. We play phone tag. They don't. Sometimes they schedule with us, but they don't answer at that time. But a good half of people are willing to talk with us. And among those, there's a lot of interest in the DPP once we can get them to talk with us. So that's been interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, do you have any insight as to, was it that they just weren't interested in the one-on-one coaching, or?
I think that could be it. The other parts of our study, the surveys and things, have incentive payments associated with them to take the surveys, but there are no incentive payments for the MAPS. So you really have to want to do it. Also, it's made us realize MAPS isn't going to be for everyone. Not everyone will be at the point where they're ready to talk about enrolling. And that's okay. It's a good resource for people that are at that point. We've thought in future studies, maybe it should be offered and people can select whether they want it and see how that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like another opportunity to use technology to facilitate choice. And some people may be fine without the coaching, and other people may want to really take advantage of that.
I've been thinking about this. I work a lot with another colleague who does a lot of tobacco cessation work. And one of the statistics he likes to quote is that it typically takes 7 offers of help with tobacco cessation for a tobacco user to decide to quit. And I'm wondering whether DPP might be similar, where we just have to, you know, first, a lot of people just have to be aware that they are even at risk and that this program even exists, which I think a good chunk of people have no idea that this program exists. And then they have to really think about, well, is this something that I want to do? And it may be that we have to come at them from every angle we can think of and over multiple times over years before we get significant numbers to enroll. People are different stages when we approach them.
Yeah, I think these are all good opportunities for future research. So what is maybe one thing that you would like for the others in the NGEAR network to know about your project?
The use of technology, the use of texting has been very successful in reaching a lot of people efficiently. We've noticed that a lot of people that we reach out to, and we're reaching out to people who have a pre-diabetic A1C in their record, but a lot of them aren't aware that they're pre-diabetic. So that initial contact is sometimes surprising for them. But the technology has allowed us to reach out to a lot of people to do that. And then the addition of the MAPS allows some in-person contact. And in the future, we think that would be ideal for those who choose it. Not for everyone, but for those who are ready for that type of conversation.
That sounds really great. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about the results of your study as they become available. Thank you so much for spending time talking with us about your project today. Thanks to all of our project presenters for an interesting and informative podcast about the ways that technology can be leveraged for behavior change and enrolling people in the National DPP. I'm wondering what you got out of this conversation today. And I'm really looking forward to hearing more from you at our virtual NGEAR meeting on June 16th. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to talking with you soon.
Thank you for listening. For more information on NGEAR projects or the work of the CDC's Division of Diabetes Translation, reach out to DDT_diabeteswebinar@cdc.gov.